Thank you for coming to this session. We're going to change gears a little bit and start talking about irrigation here. And I have an interesting project to describe to you that is part of a larger project that's been going on in the Southeast for the last 3 years. As a form of introduction, I'm a faculty member at the University of Georgia, and I'm currently in the Crop and Soil Sciences Department. So the project that this research is a part of is called the Florida Aquifer Collaborative Engagement for Sustainability. The acronym is FACETS, and it's an agricultural water cap project that went to the University of Florida 3 years ago. As you can see, there are many participants. The purpose of the project is to look at this Florida aquifer, both in terms of water use and water quality. So the Florida aquifer is a very large aquifer. It's the primary drinking water source and ag irrigation water source for many parts of the coastal plain here in the southeastern part of the U.S. So the areas that are in blue are areas of recharge for this aquifer. And so we're also concerned about contamination of the aquifer from leaching of nitrogen and so on. So this project is multifaceted. It has a team of 40 PIs on it. There's a big modeling component, there's a big economic component, a big social science component. My particular component is to evaluate best management practices that our farmers in this area could use in the future to improve the efficiency of water use and nitrogen use. And to do that, we have put together a large team of stakeholders, including farmers, people from regulatory agencies, environmental groups, and so on. And together we have come up with a list of potential management practices, which we call best management practices, that we consider practical, adoptable, but also sort of on the cutting edge of what people are doing today. So many of these are coming from farmers who are already adopting these practices. So we're doing a field experiment in the University of Georgia to evaluate some of these practices compared to common standard uses, and then we're looking at for three different crops. So this is being conducted at the Stripling Irrigation Research Park, which is a University of Georgia research facility in southwest Georgia above the Florida aquifer, where it's unconfined. We have three small fields or blocks there, each is about 2.8 acres, and we have these three crops in rotation there. So from year to year, the crops move from one block to the other, as you can see here. The blocks are irrigated with a lateral irrigation system that's equipped with VRI technology, so we can irrigate individual plots inside these blocks at the rates we want. So you can see here the system actually in action. Within each of these blocks, we have 27 plots. They're each about 8 rows wide. The data collection part is about 8 rows wide and about 45 feet long. So as I said before, the crops rotate from here to here to here and then around. So the blocks are, we can implement 9 treatments with 3 replicates each, and they're all completely randomized inside these blocks. One of the underlying factors for all the treatments that we're evaluating is that we're using cover crops, and so we're using this heavy rye cover, and we plant peanuts, cotton, and our corn directly into the rye. So I'm going to focus, of course, only on the cotton today, because we're at a cotton conference after all. And I want to describe a little bit about the different practices we're using. So here in the cotton experiment, we're looking at 3 different fertilizer treatment approaches and 3 different irrigation treatments. So the treatments that we're using for fertilizer are interesting. So fertigation is something you don't typically hear about with cotton. So this is the application of the fertilizer, the side dress fertilizer, through the irrigation system. And the reason we've adopted this for cotton is that some of our farmers in southwestern Georgia are beginning to use fertigation with corn. Some of them are doing it pretty regularly. And since cotton is part of their rotation as well, we thought, well, why can't we see if this might have a beneficial effect in terms of nitrogen use efficiency for cotton? The second treatment is pretty traditional NDVI, where we're using multispectral images, and the Oklahoma State algorithm was developed a few years ago and published by Cotton Incorporated to evaluate how much side dress N to put on. And the third one is the traditional, where we put on some pre-plant and then a liquid side dress application a few weeks into the growing season. The irrigation treatments consist of an ET-based app that I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute, soil moisture sensors that are tensiometric, and our standard extension checkbook method recommends so many inches per week during the growing season, minus whatever precipitation you might have. So each of these treatments, so we have a combination of these treatments, and they're each replicated three times. So for fertigation, we're using a mobile fertigation unit. You can see it here. Calvin and BJ Washington are helping us apply the fertilizer. So we inject the fertilizer, liquid fertilizer, directly into the irrigation system with a small amount of irrigation water. And at first, we were putting on just a tenth of water with it, tenth of an inch of water. Now we're putting on 3/10 to make sure we actually are putting the fertilizer onto the soil rather than just the canopy. For the NDVI scheduling, we're using a small UAV. Here is Lorena, my PhD student, who flies the UAV for us. It has a pair of Sequoia camera, multispectral camera on it. We collect the data when it's time to do the side dress, and then we calculate NDVI, and then we use this algorithm that was developed at Oklahoma State University. Clemson has modified it somewhat. We use essentially this curve that you see here to determine what the supplemental rate of nitrogen is. Oh, let me go back up. I would like to point out that, in case I forget to mention it later, that basically the NDVI treatment is resulting in about 10 pounds per acre less of a side dress treatment than the other two treatments we're evaluating. Now to talk about the irrigation scheduling a little bit. So the UGA extension checkbook method, as you can see here, is pretty prescriptive. If you follow it strictly, you're putting on this amount of water minus whatever rain you might get. It doesn't take into account weather conditions. It doesn't take into account cloud cover. So it tends to be very conservative in the amount of water you apply. You tend to over-apply water if you follow this strictly. The Smart Irrigation Cotton App is an ET-based method. It uses weather data to estimate evapotranspiration and uses a crop coefficient to calculate the daily water use and then recommends how much water to apply based on that. And then, of course, the soil moisture sensing system is a wireless soil moisture sensing system based on watermark sensors incorporated into a probe. We use a weighted average of the soil matrix potential to determine when to trigger irrigation. We're also collecting a lot of other data. For example, we collect soil cores at different discrete segments several times in the growing season. We collect tissue samples. We measure physiological parameters, plant height, and so on through the growing season. So I want to talk about the results a little bit now. Some of you may have heard me talk about this project a little bit last year. Last year I had a very discouraging presentation because I didn't have any of the plant or soils data to present, and no yield data because Hurricane Michael came through right over our plots last year about 2 days before we were scheduled to harvest, and we weren't able to collect any yield data. However, this year I do have some of the other data to show you from 2018. So essentially we also had a pretty wet year, as you can see. We had 32 inches of rain during the growing season, and we didn't have to irrigate very much at all. In fact, you can see that on the table there, the last column shows that, you know, just about halfway through the growing season, we didn't irrigate anymore. But nevertheless, we saw that both of the advanced irrigation scheduling methods, either the sensors or the app, requires about half the water or a third of the water than the checkbook method. And on the right, you see the soil metric potential, soil water tension graphs that show that really we had pretty moist conditions in the soil profile until pretty late in the season, when it was time to terminate irrigation anyway. I do have some of the soil results to show you from last year, and these are pretty interesting. So on the left-hand side, what the graph shows is as you go across the x-axis are the four time periods during the growing season in which we collected soil and tissue samples. So 13, 50, 91, 125, and 174 days after planting. And then the three layers of bars are the depths in the soil from which these data come. So the first is 0 to 30 centimeters, 30 to 60, and then 60 to 90 centimeters. And essentially what you see here is that we had a spike in soil N, if I can get the cursor to show up here, a little bit after our side dress application. This is a day 50 after planting, and our side dress applications began at day 46. So even at depth, we started seeing this effect very quickly. But essentially, the main message is that regardless of the fertilization treatment, we didn't have any statistically significant differences in concentrations of soil N based on fertilization methods. The same applies also if you evaluate the data using the different irrigation scheduling techniques. You see the same kind of patterns, no statistically significant differences, which I think was a little bit surprising to me considering that the checkbook method puts on more water, but maybe because that we had so much rain, you know, the rain equalized everything out and we had the same amount of leaching regardless of the irrigation treatment. We didn't have any statistically significant results in concentrations or biomass of plant tissue, so now I decided just to show you basically how the N was distributed among the different plant components. You can see here, towards the end of the growing season, of course, that most of the N is in the bowls. So to summarize the 2018 data, of course, we didn't have any yield. We had no significant differences in soil N, plant N, or biomass. The sensors and the cotton app outperformed the checkbook in terms of water use efficiency. Because we didn't have any yield results, you know, for the 2019 season, I relied on what was happening in our corn plots. And in corn, we had seen a pretty significant benefit from using fertigation in terms of nutrient use efficiency. So in 2019, because we had a reduced number of amount of resources, we're down to 3 minutes. I decided that we were going to focus our resources on evaluating what was going on in fertigation. So here are the results from 2019. And as you can see, my hypothesis that fertigation would work on cotton was destroyed. So our fertigation yields were significantly lower than the other fertilization treatments. I'm not really sure why that happened. We also had a very hot and dry summer. You can see the rain that we received was about half of the previous year. And the checkbook method and the app method recommend about the same amount of water. And it's because our app was overestimating crop water use because ET rates were so high. And really, the plant really couldn't keep up with the ET rates we were calculating. So the soil moisture sensing method was definitely the best performing of the three irrigation scheduling methods. Again, we didn't see much difference statistically in terms of soil N. We didn't see much difference in terms of biomass or plant N. And this is a little bit puzzling. Again, so now these, we don't have comparison to the other fertilization methods. This is just within the irrigation scheduling strategies with one fertilization method. So in 2020, so one of the reasons we didn't have a lot of, even though you see numerical differences here, in terms of biomass and plant N, we didn't have statistically significant differences because the variability within the plots was very, very high, as you can see from this graph. So where are we going with this study next? Well, we have a few more resources, so we're going to be able to fully evaluate all three fertilization treatments in 2020. But the long-term prospect for the other colleagues participating in this project is that we'll be using these tools and data to do modeling so we can better understand how to manage the crops, both on the field scale and on the landscape scale. And we also have a fair number of economists who are going to be looking at the economic benefits of this. And just to give you an example of the modeling, I had a master's student who just graduated, and she was using the French sticks model to try and simulate when we should be applying the fertigation treatments in corn. And we had some pretty good success with that. So we're optimistic that we can use these models not only to look what's happening at the landscape scale, but to better manage things at the field scale. And that's the end of my presentation. Do we have a minute for a question, or have I run out of time? One question? Yes, Kevin. So yeah, good question, Kevin. So essentially, we were prepared to do different application rates, but basically the NDVI data were uniform all across the plot. So instead of trying, because our we weren't really able to differentiate to put on 74 versus 76, so we just picked on one rate and applied it across all the plots that were scheduled with the NDVI. All right, we're out of time. I'll be here for the break if anybody has further questions. Thank you so much for your attention.